poorly.
Poorly.
Very poorly, sir?
No, now it's all right. For a minute there, you faded.
All right, sir, just a moment, please.
I haven't gotten up. I didn't have any rest, and I just got in late last night. Humphrey was pretty active, and then I had so many calls that I just had to talk to, like senators I talked to this morning, and I haven't really got my back quit hurting yet, but I don't know where I'm going to be. I've given some thought to going back to Washington, but I've got to be here next Wednesday. And I rather think I'd probably ought to be back up there to touch a good many bases before I come back down here for the Mexican thing. And I think I'd come Wednesday and then spend the rest of the week.
Right.
Another thing I thought I might do is fly down to John Connolly's ranch today and just soak up some good advice from him. He's always a good man in crisis, and I thought I might do that. I talked to McNamara last night. You can say that, and discussed some of the military items, things that affected the Defense Department, and also talked about some reviews we're going to have of the military budget at an early date. There's nothing to the Humphrey story, and I think you ought to knock it down hard and tough and say that the president, just tell them for background, as they know, he has indicated that he plans to visit with the NATO leaders at an early date as possible. But
you want me to knock that down?
Yes. No, I want you to say that. I have told them for background.
Oh, I see.
That a couple of months ago, that I didn't know when I would go abroad, if I would go abroad, but it was natural to presume that one who had not been able to travel after he got through the election would naturally give consideration to visiting with some folks he had been unable to visit with. I left it there. They concluded from that I would leave a meeting the day after election for Europe, which is not correct. But there was a basis for their concluding that. It wasn't just their fault, because I left it kind of doubt, and I did it intentionally. I think I would say this morning, in reply to a planted question, that off the record, on the record, that the president has not discussed with Senator Humphrey any plans for any European trip. No one with any authority has done so, and none is contemplated. None is in the offing. That's just about as strong as you can make it. And if they follow through, just say you don't know who talked to Mr. Shields. The State Department says they didn't talk to him. And the White House says they didn't talk to him. And the President didn't talk to him. So we don't know who the administration leaders are that's talking to Mr. Shields. And we might as well get this straight early in this campaign right now, that the administration leaders are right there in the White House.
Very good, sir. And now just, I will plant that question. You say that you haven't discussed, you and Senator Humphrey haven't discussed any European trip, and contemplated any in the offing. You know,
that's right. And
put that report out.
And the State Department says they know nothing about it, and the White House says they know nothing about it, and the correspondents might as well Just if they want to follow what a prudent man would follow, it doesn't apply to these White House correspondents because they didn't write the story. But if correspondents want to do what a prudent man would do, they might ask the White House.
Very good, sir.
That would take care of that one. Then when they ask you about, then you could say off the record, the President has indicated that he does plan to confer with some of the European leaders. When and where has not been determined, and when and where, when it is determined, they'll be the first to know it. The White House is, we're not going to have these leaks out of the State Department about something that the White House can do.
Very good. Do you want me to take any steps whatsoever to lay on a press plane to follow your return?
I just don't know yet when I'm going back. I may decide within an hour that I'm going back at 3 o'clock this afternoon. But I don't want to say that because decide to. We're just here trying to figure out what to do. I got a bad tooth I've got to have worked on, so I'm going to have to go into Austin or San Antonio someplace.
Today?
Yeah. And
you don't want me to mention the John Connolly Ranch business either?
No, not till I decided. I'm just stretched out in bed. That's the trouble we always have with meeting these press. We're indecisive, and we don't know. You know, I could plan it, but I haven't been to the bathroom yet, so that's a problem I have. Now, one thing I know you can do is knock the Humphrey story down hard and clear.
All right.
And if they ask you anything further about Humphrey, I think we better give it instead of his people give it.
Oh, yeah. We
better let them know that when George gets back, you and George better sit down with the Humphrey people and tell them that the Vice President, we give out the stories. And he didn't knock that story down yesterday, and he should have.
He sure didn't. Furthermore, he got everybody all excited. He said he was going to Washington. As soon as he got to Washington, he was going to meet with the Secretary of State. Well, Secretary called me last night about 6:30 Washington time, 5:30 our time, and he said, "Mac," he said, "for God's sake, what are you putting out down there?" And I said, "I beg your pardon, Secretary." He said, "Well, what's this about Humphrey coming to see me?" And I said, "Well," I said, "it's my understanding at the airport he said he was going to confer with you. When he got back, he should get back at about 7. He says, "God, Mac, I don't know anything about it." He says, "I got 20 reporters sitting in my outer office."
Well,
he didn't. He wasn't.
Well, I told him he's not to blame for that, to call each cabinet member and just tell them that he welcomed their advice and their help. He said he had plans to meet with Rusk before that. And so I may have been partially responsible for that. Rusk called me and I was not available. I was available, but he didn't choose to pursue it. I was out in the car.
Yeah, he called
me. So I may be responsible for that one. Instead of Humphrey, but I think that in discussing the Humphrey thing, if it leads into it, that you might say that we expect him to be very active in, as I was, presiding over the Senate and in the legislative meetings and in everything pertains to legislative because that's his constitutional function. That he has a statutory function, chairman of the Space Council. And we plan that he will move in there and be chairman of the Space Council. We don't expect any of this to happen until he takes the oath of office as vice president.
Exactly.
We're exploring the possibility of finding him a couple of rooms in the executive office building after he's sworn in, and that he will handle the Space Council as that statutory authority.
Right. Well, I went into that.
He'll handle the Security Council. He'll be a member of that as Security Council, and I will ask him to sit in the cabinet. That's about it at the moment.
Right. I think probably some of the stories are due to an overeager press operation of his. I think they're still kind of running as if they're in a campaign. I know Bob Jensen pretty well. He's a good boy, but I think he's just a little bit overeager right now. And
Where did the story come out? Where did Schultz's story come from? It looks like it must have come from the State Department.
Oh, it came. That's the State Department story, Mr. President. That's pure and simple, I think, when Teddy Schultz gets that. I think that's purely out of state.
Well, why don't you tell Greenfield this morning that if they don't want to put a security outfit around them that's ready to blow them up, that they're going to have to watch these Schultz stories, that I'm mad as hell about that Humphrey story coming out of there.
I will, Mr. President. By the way, Hunter McLean called me this morning.
Yeah.
He said that Bill Clark from Dallas,
yeah,
in town,
yeah,
and wanted to talk to you, and I told him I'd mention it to you.
Yeah, I'd be glad to talk to him. He'd call me out here.
All right, sir. Well, I'm going to just go ahead and touch base with him at 11 o'clock and make sure that question is planted on Humphrey. Tell him that you're conferring with
him. Let's don't get him in a fight, and let's don't show any hostility.
No. Oh, no, no.
Let's just show that we worked into the night and we reviewed. The two of us had been in every state in the Union. Me and my family had been 49, and he'd been in Alaska, and he'd been in over 40. And his wife had been in Alaska. He had been in over 40 himself, and we'd been in 49. We reviewed the problems of each state, and we talked about the senators, the new senators. We went over the roughly 40 congressmen been elected, 37 to 8, ones that we knew, and talked about them. And we talked about our budget plans and how we're going to have to hold a tight rein and try to keep our budget down. We talked about the problems of space and the great competition we've got. And he's going to be head of the Space Council. They've got a story in the New York Times. I'm getting ready to appoint a space czar. Maybe Willard Wirtz. Well, the one that will coordinate any differences between the military and civilian on space will be the Space Council. That's by law, and that's made up of the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Jim Webb, and the Chairman of the Atomic Energy Committee, and the Vice President.
All right.
We may have, well, that's about it. I think the Wall Street Journal has got a good deal of my aides talking too much, and I've got to fire the living hell out of the first one we can catch. I just got to make about two examples, just let them go hungry for a week or so, about how overworked they are and how much trouble they're having and stuff like that. Vermont Royster and Al Otten. Is Al Otten with us?
No, he's not.
Has he traveled with us much?
No, only on one trip, and that was
the He was a great Andy Johnson man back in the days when I was being dumped, and when Connally's running for governor, he's got an awful strong end with the old Kennedy crowd, and this is a mean story this morning about all of our problems, and really, we lost the election. We're in a hell of a bad shape. Everything is bad about us. We've got all the corruption on our hands, and just a terrible thing, and
aren't you surprised to know we're in such bad shape?
Yeah. I think it is. It's a story that I don't think that you can blow up, but I sure think you and Buzz ought to have more stuff for backgrounding and feeding to these people than we have. I mean, Bobby Kennedy's man can feed more goddamn stuff. He has emerged as a great political power in the morning, and our people are just
he won on his own, I suppose, in New York.
The UPI says the LBJ's vote's the biggest in percentage number. It's on page 10 of the Houston Chronicle. And it says there's been a good deal of these records out, so you ought to get that, and you ought to study it, and what you ought to do is photostat it at the presidential votes by states, and have somebody put it up on your little bulletin board, like not coming from you and not bragging.
You mean that UPI item?
As an information thing, yeah.
I posted that yesterday, Mr. President.
American voters gave Johnson the biggest vote in nation history in sheer numbers and in percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they haven't been writing that. But
no, but I saw the ticker item yesterday.
41,727 to 26 million, a margin of 15,529. That's going to run over 16, I expect. Numerically, this eclipsed the 11 million that Roosevelt beat Landon by. Well, now we got a lot more people, so that's not a very fair judge. Then in percentages, Johnson is credited with 61.4. Roosevelt had 60.8. Now, they've been giving Roosevelt 62, but he had 60.8. Write that down, 36.